In Texas, local officials are still deflecting most of the questions about why they were not more immediately responsive to warnings issued by the National Weather Service overnight back on July the 4th. With us to talk about that, Tom Skilling. And Tom, always good to be with you. Thank you for your time today. Is it still too early to really determine what happened and or what should have happened there in Texas?
Well, first of all, Bob, it's great talking with you. It always is. Look, there's much to be investigated in that. But I'll tell you something. I have a dear friend who I've worked with for many years. His name is Troy Kimmel. He's a meteorologist, longtime broadcast meteorologist down in the very area that was hit hill country there, and also is completely familiar with the National Weather Service set up down there. And, you know, there's been a lot of concern about the cuts going on in NOAA and the National Weather Service and how they might affect responding to an emergency like this flood that went on. So I talked to Troy. I figured he was the guy to talk to right after this happened. I said, how did the local weather service office perform? Oh, he said, Tom, he said, I know these folks. I've worked with them my entire career. Troy is not only a broadcast meteorologist, he's a meteorological lecturer at Texas A&M, which is his alma mater. And he said the folks at the San Angelo and San Antonio offices were fully staffed that night. You know what happens, Bob? We weather types, and that includes my colleagues at the Weather Service, are pretty devoted to what we do. And what happens at Weather Service offices, even though they're short-staffed, they have key members of their staff that are missing down there, and positions haven't been filled. But folks know a weather emergency is developing, and they'll come in on their own. They bring sleeping bags in and food and so forth, knowing they may be trapped in the office for a while, and that was the case that night. Hmm. Normally, they had two meteorologists on duty in the San Angelo, Texas office, which had responsibility over the flood area. They had five people in working that night. Tirelessly. But what's concerning is they're missing a hydrologist in the office. This is the position at Weather Service offices that deals with flooding. They also were missing their warning coordination meteorologist in the office down there. And the warning coordination meteorologist is the person who interfaces with local municipalities, law enforcement people, and coordinates reactions to weather emergencies. So this raises some questions, and it's too early to conclude what impact that might have had. But the warnings went out on time ahead of the flood itself, and it would appear from the early diagnosis of what's going on down there that the real problem was getting the information out to those who were directly affected by the flooding. They didn't have a siren system. At some of these camps that we heard were flooded, the campers, their cell phones are removed. And there, you know, this is the other important way in which the Weather Service offices get the warnings out. I'll give you an example, Bob, closer to home. In Washington, Illinois, which was hit on a Sunday morning back in November 2013 by an EF4 tornado that destroyed or damaged 1,100 homes, killed three, injured 125. The mayor of Washington, which is east of Peoria, was called 3 days ahead of time by the Lincoln, Illinois Weather Service office and told, hey, have all hands on deck in 3 days because we've got a severe weather situation developing. And he said that information was invaluable. And he regularly has that kind of contact with his Weather Service office. And indeed, when the storm came, they got the warning out. People were in church and they got the warnings on their iPhones as they were sitting in pews. And they were immediately evacuated to safe rooms, which heaven knows, probably saved lives. It's not clear that kind of communication was going on with the folks who were to become victims down there in hill country in Texas.
You know, I was surprised to hear that Texas has more flood-related deaths than any other state. And this is the really amazing fact. Flooding is the second leading cause of weather-related deaths after heat. I know you're not surprised by that, but you think because of that they would really have warning systems in place all over Texas. And I guess that they'll be taking another look at that and upgrading everything, don't you think?
Oh, I do indeed. You know, Bob, when we had that July 1996 super flood, it came a year after our heat wave disaster in Chicago. A year later, there was a $750 million flood. It involved 17 inches of rain centered on Aurora, Sugar Grove, and Naperville out in our western suburbs. It was the day, interestingly, that we launched SkyCam 9. The helicopter that the station employs, and it was sending back pictures of floodwaters up to the third floor dormers. And that flood at the time, I remember, was a record 24-hour rainfall for Illinois, and it was compared to, it was exceeded only by the 24-hour rainfall at a flood in Texas. So you're right. I mean, they're right there by the Gulf where moisture floods in, and they had the remnants of a tropical cyclone, a tropical storm, feeding moisture into there, and there's no atmosphere that's moister than one which sustains a tropical storm or a hurricane. So they had all the ingredients there to produce a massive flood, and it happened. They had training thunderstorms, which is often how these floods occur, over the same area repeatedly for hours on end. And what resulted, we all know about. We've been seeing these horrific pictures and then hearing about the results of that.
I want to talk to you more about Texas and also how Chicago is affected by what may or may not happen with the cuts at the National Weather Service and FEMA. Also, want to get into climate change with you a little bit. It's Tom Skilling. Hang on, Tom. We've got a weather and traffic break here. And Steve, I'm going to leave Tom's microphone open during the weather, so be careful what you're saying here.
I know. He's going to correct me in real time here. But today, generally uneventful weather for today. Mostly sunny. Maybe some isolated thunderstorms possible later today into tonight. We'll be interested in tomorrow, though, because there is a chance of severe weather across the Chicago area that could bring some flash flooding to the area with the thunderstorms that will pass through the area. We think that's going to happen Wednesday afternoon through Wednesday evening. So we'll keep you posted on that as we get closer to tomorrow. We're on our way to 92 today. It'll be 73 overnight tonight, partly cloudy with isolated thunderstorms. And then partly cloudy, more humid tomorrow with a chance of those strong late-day thunderstorms. 91, the expected high.
How did he do, Tom? Was that all right? Was that accurate?
Oh, Steve always gets an A+.
There you go.
You know, I've worked with Steve over the years, and a more competent weather forecaster outside the meteorological profession simply doesn't exist, Bob. So I give Steve an A+.
I love that.
He loves the weather, too.
Yeah, he do. We're going to have to make a promo.
I know he does.
Yeah. Inspired, of course, by you, Tom.
Everybody
is. That's right. Bob, I got to tell you, Steve and I talked years ago before he was at WGN, and he called me up on something. I remember some weather issue. So he is a weather enthusiast, no question about it.
Weather enthusiast. That's a nice way of saying it.
I like it.
Talking with Tom Skilling at 7:51, and there was a report recently about FEMA in Texas, Tom, answering more than 99% of the calls they got on July 5th. But then the next day, that percentage went down to 35%, and then by July 7th, it was only 15%. So the question is, does FEMA have enough staffing? And the president says FEMA needs to be fixed, not cut. Where are we with this?
You know, Bob, FEMA is, that's a little outside my lane. I've been reading the same reports you've been reading, and that's concerning, to say the least, especially with hurricane season coming up. But look, what's going on within the Weather Service and the cuts that are going on there to research, they're going to shut down the National Severe Storms Laboratory due to budget cuts. They're going to shut down. That's the laboratory that developed the Doppler radar systems. Decades of government funding of research developed the radar systems, like the one we have at Romeoville, that spot tornadoes early. There's an effort underway now to combine modeling, AI modeling, with radar reports and hopefully get tornado warnings out, not 16 minutes ahead of time, which has been the average in many locations, but hopefully even an hour or more ahead of time by modeling these storms with these new AI models. The laboratory that's doing that is shut down. Among the other areas of the Weather Service, you know, when you have a flood like the one in Texas, what happens after that is they go back and look at the models and all that were used to forecast these storms and try and improve them. The same way we try and improve hurricane models that haven't performed well. And they're shutting down the laboratory in Key Biscayne, Florida, that is working on improving hurricane models. They're also shutting down cooperative institutes that do research at universities across the country. There's one up at the University of Wisconsin-Madison that produces all kinds of satellite products that all of us in the weather profession use to forecast the weather. That facility's existence is on the block. So, you know, this is what concerns us. Our scientific research in this country is the envy of the world, or at least it has been. And they're cutting serious meat out of this with this budgeting that's going on. I was talking to folks at Argonne Laboratory at Lamont. They have a supercomputer, an exascale computer, that does 2 billion billion mathematical operations per second. It will map the human brain, try and figure out how cancer spreads through the body. But it's also looking at AI modeling of climate and weather. And there, somebody from Argonne told me at a climate conference I had attended 2 weeks ago in Chicago, that the Department of Energy that runs Argonne is zeroing out all environmental research programs, at least in the proposed budgets. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is concerning, Bob, because, you know, with that flood in Texas, they did an admirable job in getting the warnings out, even with reduced staffing, because the employees were so dedicated, they came in on their own in some cases to cover the storm. But when you cut out the researchers who try and improve these models so that we're better able to forecast these storms in the future, you're cutting out some incredibly important science that shouldn't be reduced. And that's where we are right now.
Yeah, and it could be that in Texas, some government officials didn't take advantage of some of the warning systems that were actually in place. We should mention that here in Chicago last week, when we had about a month's worth of rain falling in 90 minutes just west of the United Center, federal weather forecasters sent out early warnings of possible flash flooding, and that triggered a chain of events that did alert Chicago residents about potential danger. We need those warnings. Tom Skilling, before we let you go, I have to ask you about climate change. I know we could go on for hours about this, but
just in
the couple of minutes we have left, did climate change make the Texas flood worse? I know scientists say it's kind of tricky to answer that,
that
question, isn't it? What do you think?
It is. You know, Bob, the common wisdom is that you don't take a particular weather event and say, hey, this is the result solely of climate change. But one thing we can say, the atmosphere is warming. That's an established fact. And a warmer atmosphere holds more moisture. And therefore, what we're seeing is climate change produces weather extremes on both ends of the spectrum. You're getting in dry areas, more severe and extended droughts. In moist areas like Texas, you're getting more frequent floods. And we see that in, you know, these billion-dollar disasters. The taxpayer ultimately is on the hook to pay for the cleanups for all these. Can you imagine what's going on in Texas, what that's going to cost as they go through that tragic situation down there and look for the victims and those who have perished? This is expensive. So are tornado disasters, hurricane disasters in Florida. In the wake of all these hurricanes that hit, they have trouble getting flood insurance. And if they get it, the premiums have gone up 400% to 500% for homeowners in Florida. In Los Angeles, because of wildfires that likely were stoked to some extent by climate change, they're just cut out the insurance. People can't insure their homes against wildfires. So there are very practical consequences to the increased number of extreme weather events that are occurring, and there is an increased number of these extreme weather events. That's what climate change is insidious. You don't see it every day out your back window. It's when you get these extreme weather events, extreme heat, cold, rain, snow, hurricanes that intensify more quickly than they ever did before. You know, folks go to bed, they hear there's a Cat 1 hurricane heading their way, and they think, oh, we've gone through a Cat 1 hurricanes before. Mm-hmm. And what's happening is because of these abnormally warm ocean waters, these hurricanes overnight are going from Cat 1 to top level Cat 5, which are catastrophic storms. And anybody who's remained on a barrier island on our coastlines thinking a Cat 1 hurricane that wakes up to find they've got a monster coming at them, which is going to flood their island and cut off their escape. We saw that in Hurricane Ian.
Yeah, and you get more and more of these tragedies, as you say, all the time. And, you know, all of our insurance premiums are going up because
we all pay for it.
All I know is, and I'm a dumb guy, I don't know anything, but I remember I was watching Al Gore's movie, An Inconvenient Truth, years ago, and everything he said came true. And we need to get on the ball here and do what we can and hope it's not too late. It's Tom Skilling. Always great to hear from you, Tom. All the best.
Bob,
stay healthy out there.
Great to talk to you.
Good being with you. It's news
Thanks
time.
Thanks for the invite, Bob. Always great to talk. You take care.
Hey, you as well. Thank you.